So, this is the time that I tell you a little bit about, and I only know a little bit about Karen, okay? So it's not like I'm going to say
good. Well, you don't know everything.
Yes, I know. Those are your tight friends there, I can tell. And that's good that you have tight friends like that. And I'm sure that you'll introduce them yourself, okay? So here I am. You know, I was going through prostate cancer. And so they give you this ring to hold on to as they do their thing while you're laying on the table. And so the ring they gave me was one that was very sticky. And I thought to myself, as I'm laying there on the table, I cannot keep holding on to all of these sticky rings. And so I decided I am going to go to get my own ring, and I'm going to the pet store and buy my own personal ring. So, and as I was in there, I looked up, and there was a T-shirt in front of me that begged me to ask questions. And so, and I think you have that T-shirt on right now. Yes. And what is that? And the T-shirt says again?
It says, you belong.
You belong.
Got a heart.
Yeah. And at the same time, the pastor was talking, we were talking about dealing with the subject matter of abortion and things of that nature. And so, and I thought, okay, well, this is interesting. It's in front of me. And then I don't know how we got into the conversation, and we gradually got into that conversation. And it was like God just opened the door, literally. You follow what I'm saying? I mean, it was like it was no problem talking to Karen. Absolutely, there was no problem. And I thank God for that. I thank God that you were easy to talk to, because you could have easily said, please stand back, mind your own business. Exactly. Yeah, but she didn't do that. So at this time, would you please give Karen a big hand clap and thank her for coming.
Well, this is my very first testimony, other than in my Sunday school class or Bible study, that they put me on the spot impromptu, and I told my story probably in front of about...
Just in case you need that.
Oh, thank you, sir. Mm-hmm. About 20 women. And I was a little nervous doing that. A lot of the women at my church had no idea what I'd gone through or knew anything about my past, although I've attended this same church for 20 plus years. I'll start out, I was born in Wichita, Kansas in 1945. From an early age, I knew I was adopted. It wasn't any secret. My parents told me I was special and chosen and selected, and I liked that. And I felt loved. And my parents said that out of all the babies they could have, they chose me. Well, about the time they said that, we had gone to a shelter because I wanted a dog. And so we're going up and down the aisles looking at all these dogs. But first, when we walked in the door, I saw a friendly Cocker Spaniel, and I said, I want that dog. And my dad said, no, let's go look at some. I said, no, I want that dog. So I kind of paralleled that with my parents, thinking, I want that baby. And I grew up in a sweet little elementary. We did Pledge Allegiance. We said a prayer. This was in 1950 when I started kindergarten. And I went to that school for 8 years, transferred to a junior high, and then on to a Great Big High School. And so when it came time for me to go to work, I was asked for my birth certificate. And I saw my birth certificate, and it said I was born in a doctor's office. And I asked my mother about that. She goes, no, you weren't. You were born in the osteopathic hospital. She's kind of a little bit short sometimes. And so a few years later, I searched the osteopathic hospital for their records because I was curious about my birth mother. I knew I couldn't ask my adoptive mother because she'd get really upset when I'd ask her, like, weren't we good parents? Yes, you were. But my dad would be forthcoming. So I asked my dad about her, and I said, why did she give me up? And he said she couldn't afford to take care of you. And I said, was she pretty? Isn't that a funny thing to ask? But I think girls want to know that. I remember asking my mother as a little girl, and I was a dorky looking kid, let me tell you. I said, Mom, am I pretty? And she says, pretty is as pretty does, meaning if you have good behavior, you're pretty. So fast forward, I had learned a few years later that the adoption laws in Kansas had become open, and you could write with a notarized letter saying you were who you were and a copy of your driver's license and I think your birth certificate. There's a Part A and a Part B if you're adopted. And I'd written for my birth certificate a couple of times, and I'd always get the same one that had my adopted parents' names on there. It still always said, though, born in the doctor's office. So this time, I got it notarized, but this time I was in my 30s, had three children, and go out to the mailbox one day, and I have a letter from Vital Statistics, and I thought, oh, I'm not going to get excited. It's going to be the same old one I got or had gotten before. So I opened up the mail, and it was funny. My kids, for some reason, all followed me out to the mailbox that day. And I'd opened it up, and I'm standing there in amazement. It's like there's a name of a woman. There's her address. There is siblings born to this woman, now living, one. It never dawned on me I could have a brother or a sister. I was raised an only child. Had another box that said legitimate. No. Seems like there was another box on there, but it had her address where she lived back then. So I went on a search to try to find her, and I discovered that where she had lived, that was her ex-husband, and he was a grouchy old guy. And I thought, when I talked to him, man, I hope he's not my father. And but he didn't want to give me much information. And so I called the post office in this town. It's called Florence, Kansas, small little town. And I thought, people that live on a street like 3rd Street, I think that was her street, lived there for a long time. You know, in an older town, like 1st, 2nd, 3rd, people didn't move back then as much. So I asked the postman or postwoman if she would be willing to give me some names of people that lived on that street. I don't think I could make that happen now. I don't think they'd give you that information, but they did. They gave me two or three names. So I called information like we did in the old days and got some phone numbers, and I started calling. And I said, I'm looking for my mother, and her name is Dorothy. By that time, I knew her name. And she lived on your block. And this person said, well, I knew your mother. I said, she was the nicest lady in town. And that was kind of confusing on my birth certificate because it said her name was Dorothy Brown, but she signed it Dorothy McCoy. I thought, well, that's kind of confusing. So then I called another person on there, and they said, oh, she was a marvelous pianist. Oh, I play the piano. So that was kind of intriguing. So when I did my search, still trying to find her, I can't remember what avenues I was looking, but I was going nowhere. So I thought, okay, I'm going to call that grouchy old guy back again. So I called him, and He wanted no part of this conversation, but evidently his wife had walked in behind him. There was a woman's voice and said, she married John Foster. She lives in Mesa, Arizona. So, wow, thank you, John Foster, Mesa, Arizona. So I called information and asked for John Foster in Mesa, Arizona, and was given two numbers. On the first phone call, the first ring, a lady answers. And I said, Dorothy? And she said, yes. And I said, I said, my name's Karen, and I have something I want to share with you. And if you feel like you want to pursue this conversation, I'll leave my number with you. I didn't want to intrude on her life. I didn't want to cause a problem. So I thought if I just put that out there, and maybe she wouldn't call. I really didn't expect her. After I said that, I thought, she's not going to call me back. And then she said, oh, I know. The first time she answered, I said, I have a bad connection. I'll have to call you back. Because I, like, panicked. It's like I hadn't planned on somebody really answering the phone. So I called one of my friends, a prayer partner, and we prayed that I would, God would give me words. So I called back. I said, I'm the lady that called a while ago with a bad connection. And I have something I want to share with you. My name's Karen. And if you want to pursue the conversation, I'll leave my number with you. And she says, I know who you are, and I know why you're calling. And I went, gulp. And I can't remember everything that came after that, but she said she'd prayed for years that I would find her.
Wow.
And, of course, here it was. It's like all those years I've thought about her and wondered about her. And one day I thought, I wonder if she ever thinks about me, which is kind of a dumb thing to think. You know, probably she did. But I was young, and by this time, though, I was in my 30s. I was more mature, and I was a strong Christian at that point. And I prayed for her. I wanted her to know I'd never had any animosity towards her. I didn't hold anything against her. You know, my dad explained why she didn't keep me, and that was fine. I had a nice home and all of that. So we talked all day long on the phone, and just blah, 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 blah. And we shared things we liked, our traits, different things. She told me I had three half-brothers. And my first brother that was listed on the birth certificate, he died by the time I found her. But I had two half-brothers. So next on our list, we were going to exchange photographs. So I put together a packet of, when I was little bitty up till present, and she did the same thing. So it was so exciting to open those photographs, and I thought, I don't look anything like her, you know, but I expected to. She's my mother, you know. And my daughter, my eldest daughter, was 10 at the time, and she's looking at the pictures with me. She goes, Mom, she looks just like Granny. That was my adoptive mother. And through the stages of her life, she resembled my mother in such a great way. Which at one point, my son got the two of them confused. And I never told my, excuse me, I never told my adoptive mother I'd found her, because she would get so upset. And I thought, oh boy, she'd really be upset if she knew that. And then as things unfolded, I realized why she kept that from me. Because I didn't know the whole story. So the next thing on the agenda was she was going to come visit me. So she gets in her little, she had a little Toyota or a little, some little something, and drove from Mesa, Arizona to come to my house. And I remember when she rang the doorbell, when I go to the door, I expected to be seeing me in her face, but I didn't. She looked like the pictures, of course. You know? So anyway, she came in. She stayed with us several days, and sadly, she was a chain smoker. We all about had emphysema by the time she left. But she cried like the whole week, and I think I mentioned I've been praying for her that she'd feel forgiveness, and I think she received it that week. And she said, there is no hell like the hell of a woman that gives up a baby. So I asked her about my birth certificate that said born in Dr. Paul Jones' office. And what my mother had told me, she goes, no, you were born in the doctor's office. Because I'd gone in there and was having an abortion. And instead of the abortion, you came. I said, wow, I'm supposed to be here. And so it's like my forgiveness encompassed all of that for her, and I was grateful that she didn't feel any shame. I don't think she did. We became friends, good friends. She did not replace my mother. I didn't want to tell my mother I'd found her, so just to spare her. But I did sit down and wrote my mother a letter, and I thanked her for raising me in church. And remembered some special things that she did even I was little, and I wrote those out. My mother was a very emotional person, and anything emotional she'd leave the room. She couldn't handle. I don't know if she felt shame for her emotions coming through. But I never heard from her after I sent her that letter. And I'm pretty sure she got it because she had the pretty, you know, had an accurate address for her. I'd like to think that she did because I think she needed to hear that. So, anyway, in 2010, I married Mr. Wonderful right here, back in the back row. And that was such a blessing because in 1969, I married a man that was short, dark, and handsome. Can't have everything, you know. And he pursued me, and we had a very rocky courtship. We were going to get married. We weren't going to get married. It's like there was no stability in the relationship. I'd break up with him, then he'd beg me to come back, and we'd go back and forth. Well, also, the ethnicity that he was didn't match with mine, and so his family was very opposed to us getting married. And my friends were opposed to me marrying him because of our rocky relationship. Well, he kept pursuing me, and then his family started calling me, the family that didn't want him to marry me, the family that offered to buy him a Corvette if he didn't marry me. He should have taken the car. We'd all been a lot better off. But they had a pretty dark complexion skin tone and dark hair, and the girls had long eyelashes and not, you know, pale face and blonde hair. And so... anyway, then his family started calling me, saying he's miserable without you. And they bothered me so much, I thought, I'm going to have to marry him to get any peace. So I did. We got married in the Orthodox Church. I don't know how much any of you know about the Orthodox, kind of like the Greek Orthodox. Remember Jackie Onassis? And you do the little thing around. Everything's three for the Trinity. And you have crowns and you exchange them back and forth. And I had a roommate right before my wedding. And... She couldn't stand him. In fact, we had a ritual right before my wedding. We took my engagement ring and pounded it into a board and kind of had a little ceremony like, never, it's done, it's over with. And then here I marry him. She's sitting in the audience going, I can't believe she's doing this. She's running her life. I can't believe, you know, and I'm sure people were, you know, I'm standing at the back of the church not knowing this was going on, but it was a very beautiful night, and it entered my mind, I think I'll just take a walk. Like, you know, I was really having wet feet, too. But we got married, and shortly after, I mean, he lied about everything. I couldn't trust him about anything. He's supposed to be going to college and finish his degree. No, he was going to the pool hall, so I would think he's going to college. And it just escalated and escalated from there. You know, he was not to be trusted. So I went to a counselor, got him to go. We got back together. It was still the same thing. And it was just back and forth, just like our courtship. So then I filed for divorce. So now we're separated, and I have a little 2-year-old girl. And I get a call from him saying, I've become a Christian. I thought, oh, I have heard everything else, you know. Because there was always some reason I had to take him back.
Lies, lies,
jumping. So anyway, he'd called a number. He was in a hotel. And he'd called a number. I think they were Christian businessmen, and they came to the hotel and prayed with him to receive Christ. And they even had him speak, you know, about his new conversion. So he wanted me to go visit with this woman who is the mother of a friend of his, this longtime buddy of his that he'd gone to high school with. He said, if you become a Christian, my mother will know if you're a Christian or not. And so he had him come over to his house and meet with Mrs. Ima Lowe, the most beautiful person I think I ever met. So he wants me to come over and meet Mrs. Ima Lowe, and I didn't want to go. I thought, okay, to get him off my back, I'll go meet with Mrs. Lowe. So I go to meet with her, and oh my gosh, what a radiant, loving woman. She just, oh my gosh, just exuded love. Had a perpetual smile. So beautiful. And she talked to me about the Lord and about my faith and my growing up in the church. And so she invited me to a dinner. And It was called Christian Women's Club. Now, my friends here know about that because there are Christian Women's Clubs actually in every city of maybe the world. I don't know. They're everywhere. And so Christian Women's Club, it's where they invite you. You invite someone you think may not know the Lord. And it's a comfortable setting like at a country club or it's not in a church. And then they'll have a program and a speaker or a music. And then they'll have a spiritual speaker, their life before and after Christ. So I went, well, I didn't want to go. I thought the last thing I wanted to do was go be with a bunch of little old ladies praying. But I'd already said, I'm going to go. So I went. And the woman that spoke talked about her life before and after Christ. And after she was through, they put little slips of paper at everybody's place setting, and there's some questions like, did you enjoy the evening? Did you like the dinner? Did you like the music? Did you pray the prayer to receive Christ? Are you interested in Bible study? I went, check, 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 check. And even though I was raised in church, I had a strong prayer life, mainly when I was a sophomore in high school, it got stronger. I believed in Jesus, I believed in God, but I didn't really have the relationship like this woman talked about. And I was excited, and I got in some Bible studies. And next thing I know, Mrs. Lowe wants us to join her church, and it was a Baptist church. Now, my husband's Orthodox, and I was already an outcast because I'm pale-faced. And so he joins a Baptist church. Well, that went over like a lead balloon. But it was like his idea, it wasn't my idea. And so anyway, that was the first few years of our marriage. So we'd go a few steps forward, back up, a few steps forward, back up. He took a job in Oklahoma City. I was born in Wichita, so was he. We moved to Oklahoma City. Well, we thought we were getting away from his parental influence. They'd just pop in all the time at our house, always in our business. So now we're in Oklahoma City. Guess what? Aunts and uncles, his mother was from a family of 10. Cousins galore, it's like genealogy in the Bible. That's how many relatives there were. And so it's like we really didn't have freedom because he's got cousins everywhere. And his uncles wanted him to play gin rummy. That was something they did a lot of, and they played a lot of golf. Well, he loved golf. Well, gin rummy, they gamble a lot. Golf, but he told me they only play for a dime. But I found out later, a dime is $1,000. So there was a lot of lying, a lot of hiding of money. I could never get to the bottom of anything. I always thought he was probably having an affair. I could never prove it. But yet I kept seeing a little glimmer of faith or hope in him, so I kept hanging on. So I hung on for 33 years. But this time, he'd gotten in so much trouble, he was going to have to go to prison for bad business practices. And here I am with three children. Two of my daughters had already been married, and my son was, I think, 21. We're coming home from a holiday in Wichita to see his parents on Christmas, and here comes the police officer chasing him down. It's like, oh, good, Dad's usual Christmas ticket, you know, no big deal. Pulls us over, takes him back to the police car. He's not getting out. The girls in the other car calling, said, when are we going to go? I don't know. So it seemed like a long period of time. I get out of the car, decide I'm going to walk back there and see what's going on. Here come two or three highway patrols. I had a gun pulled on me. So he was in a lot of trouble. I don't really know exactly what he did, but I know Las Vegas debts were part of that. Fraud was part of that. So he gets sentenced, and we have a prayer meeting at my church, a lot of friends, a couple of pastors, and he told everyone, I'm going to take care of her while I'm gone. So a few weeks later, his sister and I and a friend of his drove him to the Fort Worth medical, forgot the last word, it's a prison, but it's called Fort Worth Medical something. It's a gated community. So anyway, that was pretty humbling and scary. I have a really good friend who's a very glamorous person, and she has really strict boundaries. And going to a prison would not ever be anything she'd ever do. It wasn't anything I'd ever do. I was afraid there wasn't going to be a plan for my finances. And his sister was very difficult, and I was a little worried about being in the car with her, so she volunteered to go with me. Well, we get to the prison, and here's the press all over the place. My girlfriend's got these great big black glasses. She looks like Marilyn Monroe. And I thought, oh, no, it's the Friday newspaper, and it's going to be all over town in Oklahoma City. The Friday newspaper is the social paper for Nichols Hills, the Greens, the Quail Creek, kind of northwest Oklahoma City. No, it was the governor, I think, of Alabama that had arrived that day. So that's what the press was for. I was greatly relieved because I was so ashamed, you know, so ashamed and terrified. So here I am. I had just started working for my church as one of the wedding coordinators. I made $500 a month. That's the only income I have without him. And he's gone to prison. He's going to be there for 14 months. Finally caught him for sure. He had an affair. So I knew I had scriptural grounds to divorce him. But I don't have any family to help me. There wasn't anybody to help me. I had some really good friends, and I had a church family. It's like, who am I? You know, I don't want to tell anybody all of this stuff. And one of my friends said, Karen, you got to go to the church. You got to tell them what's going on. I said, what are they going to do about it? You know, it's awful. I don't expect them to do it. She goes, just go. So I went and talked to one of the pastors at my church. And then I joined a Bible study called Divorce Care, and I filed for divorce after he went to prison. And so here I am. Our house is in foreclosure. His vehicle's in foreclosure. At one point, we thought maybe he'd killed himself. When I found out about the affair and found out another big lie about some sports car he bought that it was supposed to be chemicals for his business, invested him on that, I was just so sick of him. I put all his clothes, and he had a wardrobe like Johnny Carson would dream of. It took me forever to haul all his stuff out on the sidewalk, and I called his employees. I said, come and get it. So he's at his office, and he calls, and he's sobbing, and he's remorseful. Of course, I've heard all this before. And he said, take care of Jill. We have a special needs daughter named Jill. And click. And I thought, he's probably going to kill himself. And part of me thought, well, that will, you know, take care of some things. So I was concerned, and my son drove down to his office, broke the door in, thinking he's going to find him dead. No. And he called the police. They found him wandering down I-35. They picked him up, took him to the crisis center downtown Oklahoma City. Then they transported him to the mental ward in Norman. And so he was there for a couple of days, and I had to go pick him up. And fortunately, my car was paid for, so nobody was going to take my car. But here we were. His past life consisted of a driveway full of all kinds of new cars, racehorses, an airplane, trips to Las Vegas, just living the high life, probably at somebody else's expense. He was an excellent salesman. He didn't need to cheat or be dishonest. He could have had a good living. But I never knew. I never knew how to get to the bottom of anything. There was either somebody calling, always something. But I look back now, and I see that was God's protection. I didn't want to be in that marriage, but I had three kids. I couldn't have sent my kids to good schools. I couldn't have provided a decent home for them. You know, I hadn't worked since 1975. And here I'm 58 with no money and having no idea where I'm gonna move. So I just prayed for work. I prayed for work. And you wouldn't believe how much work I got. I mean, job after job after part-time job. I started a bridal consulting business. I was already doing weddings at my church. My daughter had just gotten married. Two of them had. So I had a lot of experience, not only with special events, but now I knew the wedding business. So so two people booked a wedding, and just like that, God just worked that out to where one day it's like, I can't believe this. I am self-sufficient. I had a place to live. I still had everything else in my life that gave me joy. I had my church, had my friends, had my kids. So I filed for divorce while he was in prison. That was in 2002. In 2009, I get a Facebook message from a guy and asked me if I remembered him. And yes, I did remember him. We'd worked together in Wichita at Cessna Aircraft in 1972. It's that guy right back there. And so next thing I know, we were talking on the phone. He lived in Texas. I'm in Oklahoma City. And we talk and talk and talk. We'd email. And so on his way to Wichita, he decided he was going to stop in. So I guess I'd call that our first date. So then, a few weeks later, he's got to go back to Wichita again, but he stopped in to see me. In the meantime, when he learned what all I'd been through, he asked me, how can you be so happy after all you've been through? And I said, well, it's Christ, Christ in my life. And we talked about that. I said, hadn't anyone ever talked to you about that? I knew he didn't go to church. And as it turned out, I got to lead him to Christ.
Amen.
And he said that there wasn't anybody else that could have done that. And so I'm grateful I did. So on our third date, we got married, and so I married a believer. And on our second date, one of my pastors baptized him in his personal swimming pool because, you know, it was Saturday and he had to leave. So anyway, that's our story, and he's my dream come true. And so right after our marriage, this was in, 2013, my eldest daughter gets bile duct and liver cancer. And two of my kids had a terrible connective tissue disorder. Causes joint dislocations, ripped skin, broken bones. They both were sewn together with many stitches, always going to the ER. Stacy, my eldest, did not get that. She was a runner, a jogger, or healthy. So for her to get cancer, that was quite a shock. And she opted to take chemo, which gave her a few more months. So she died in 2013. And a few years later, my other daughter had an accident here in Oklahoma City. Now, we're in Texas. And, in fact, we were building a house. And she'd torn all the ligaments away from her kneecap. And she was getting into a van, fell backwards, hit her head on cement, had to be ambulanced to the hospital. Okay, so she thinks her kneecap's off. So they put it back on. So she goes home, and Monday she had a doctor's appointment, and she goes out to get in a car. Someone had picked her up to take her. Same thing, she fell backwards, hit her head, ambulance. She had no ligaments attached to her kneecap. That's why it didn't stay on. It's a wonder she walked from her apartment out to the driveway. So she had to have a total leg reconstruction. They had to use cadaver parts because her parts weren't working. So I had to come and look after her and care for her. And we saw that it wasn't going to be an immediate fix. So we gave our house back to the builder. I was staying with a friend who lived closer to where she was, hospitalized, and he was kind of out near Guthrie. And he brings our travel trailer here. And so he was living in this small travel trailer with our dog, and it was getting pretty small. So we bought a house. And so we're now living in Oklahoma City, and I'm caring for my daughter. I've just been here a few weeks. I get a phone call. The embassy in Indonesia announces to me that my son, who was there starting a business, had just died. He was 39. And I brought some pictures. I kind of wanted to share with you what all these people look like. Here's the first one. These are my parents. Can you see those well? These are the parents that adopted me and gave me such a good life. This was Dorothy, my birth mother. She didn't look anything like me. Here's a picture of her and I when she came to visit me. And then when I go to Arizona to meet my brothers, by the way, when I pulled up to their house, the two of my brothers are in a fist fight out in the front yard, and the police were there. How old are they? Old enough to know better. Let's see, I was probably 37. They were 30. Oh, wow. 30. And, of course, my cranky old dishonest husband, he goes, oh, boy, white trash, you know. And so anyway, I met them. Here they are. They're like a couple of hooligans. And they were Harley guys before being a Harley guy was as cool as it is now. And anyway, this brother, his name is Bill. He and I have become close. He came to Oklahoma City to work for our company and was here for a couple of years. Chuck has died. He had a daughter he hadn't seen in years, and he asked me if I was on Facebook, and I said yes, and he said, I think my daughter is on Facebook. He hadn't seen his daughter in several years. So he was hinting maybe I could help reconcile them, and so I contacted her. Sure enough, I did. She was a beautiful girl. He married an Indian woman because she was dark complexion, kind of like two of my kids. I'll show you in a minute. And so he died of cancer shortly after, but he got to meet his grandson and see his daughter, who he hadn't seen for years. So that was the blessing that came out of that. Here's my sweetie. And he'll probably shoot me for this. This is proof he got baptized. So, let me show you this. Oh, I just learned that. I'll wait. So when I'm talking to Gene Carter at PetSmart, I told him that I was an abortion survivor and I belong to a network called the Abortion Survivors Network. Well, there are 500 abortion survivors this network is in contact with. And I have some statistics that I kind of don't want to talk about those now. I'm boring you with those. But there are many babies still born alive, no matter how hard they try to exterminate them. The founder of the group, she sat in chemicals for 3 days trying to kill her because the abortion didn't work. She's a beautiful woman, not a flaw on her. So I learned about that, and I went to my first retreat last year. And here's a group of, it was just for women. It's a group of all of us with this shirt I have on. And it was wonderful to hear their stories. Almost everyone was a Christian. Almost everyone had forgiven their parents. And just a sweet, beautiful group of people. They have healing studies because a lot of them have a lot of baggage from that, you know. Fortunately for me, I didn't have that. I didn't feel I wasn't wanted, you know. But a lot of them did and carried that. But they're getting healed through the Abortion Survivors Network. In November, this past November, through DNA, I found out who my birth father was. And I'd wanted to know for a long time. He was not who my birth mother said he was. Had a different name, but she said he was in the service, he had children, and he was married. Well, this guy was too, but he didn't have the same name. And I verified it through DNA and met a niece, found out I had four sisters on my father's side. I had three brothers on my mother's side. And so two of them are deceased. I've spoken to both remaining girls on the phone. One of them's in really bad shape. And my father, I hate to call him my father. I like to reserve that for God. He was a pedophile. He raped all these girls and their mother. So, you know how grateful I am? God delivered me from all of that. And during my single years that I hadn't planned on, he sent me work to where I could take care of myself. One day I thought, I am so proud of myself. I mean, I never thought I could do that, you know. Certainly not to give my kids things that they'd had. And fortunately, their dad had already given them everything, so all I had to do really was focus on holidays, you know. This is a picture of my son. Took him. He was a pretty boy. Here's a picture of my daughter, Stacy, with my daughter that had the surgery. Stacy has this pretty dark skin tone, like her brother. And Jill is pale face like me. Here's another picture of Stacy and Gavin. My son's name was Gavin. And here's a picture of him I really like with his big toothy grin. He played a lot of golf. He was a caddy. And he was starting a business in Indonesia. And one day he said to me, he said, Mom, you know all that sunscreen you put in my golf bag? I was always saying, where are your sunscreen? He goes, I never wore it. And here's a picture of he and my other daughter. He invited her to Florida a year before he died and showed her a wonderful vacation for a week. And I have a funny picture, because I've left a lot out, but we don't have time for all of it. But I do want to share some scripture. But I was thinking about when we adopted our pet, our dog, he cost $50. And we often say, that's the best $50 we ever spent. We love him. He's animated. He's part Jack Russell and part poodle. And anyway, my father gave my birth mother $50 and a carton of cigarettes for me. So, you know, what is a life worth? In my case, $50 and a carton of cigarettes for me. That's what my father, my adoptive father, gave my birth mother at that doctor's office when they came to get me. They had been patients of the doctor, and they'd wanted a child for many years. He's got this kid in his office he hadn't planned on, so he calls my parents, and they came and got me. So you can see why my mother would get so irritated when I'd say, why does it say I'm born in a doctor's office? Well, I was thinking about my dad today, and he was such a gentle man, and I think I was probably a handful. He said, I never knew it was 100 miles to North High and back until my daughter got a driver's license. And we had this great big, I think it was a 60 Plymouth with the big wings. And we had a garage that had a door just barely wide enough to get that car in the garage. And I know he wished I'd never tried it. But I can just see him sitting there reading the paper. Crash. Karen's home again. It's like he never got upset with me. I don't remember him ever being mad at me. So I think he probably just picked up the crowbar, went out there and straightened out the frame. And I finally learned to let Dad do that. But you all know the poem about footprints in the sand where you thank God, where were you? I'm just going to read part of it. And it said, Lord, you said, once I decided to follow you, you'd walk with me all the way. But I've noticed that during the most troublesome times of my life, there's only one set of footprints. I don't understand why when I needed you most, you would leave me. The Lord replied, my precious, precious child, I love you. I would never leave you during your times of trial and suffering. When you see only one set of footprints, it was then that I carried you. And I believe that he did. I had some beautiful friends in a prayer group I went to. And one of them said, Karen, it looked to me like God just carried you around on a pillow. I said, well, it didn't feel like it. But I know that. You know, I was worried about what kind of problems his troubles could cause me and the children. I visited with a lawyer at my church, and he said, were you ever in any of those meetings? Did you sign anything? No, no. He said, you're okay. You don't need to worry. It was still very scary to know that he was going to prison and to know people were mad at him and, you know. But I survived. God provided for me. And now I have a wonderful marriage and a cute little dog. I'm missing two of my children, but my other daughter is a blessing. And, you know, I feel like I have it all.
Well, thank you for coming and sharing your story with us. It's a good example that we all have a story to tell, and how the Lord has worked in our lives, and how the Lord providentially has just brought you through all of the a topsy-turvy life. I was when you were speaking of your dad paying $50 in a carton of cigarettes for you, and a verse came to mind. I think it's in Isaiah 49. It says, can a mother forget her baby? And then God says, though she may forget, I will not forget you, because I have engraven you on the palms of my hands. And the turmoil that as you came into the world, but yet God's eye was upon you and sustained you, and has engraven you, on the palms of his hands. Anybody have any questions for Karen?
Karen, did you introduce your friends?
I am so sorry. These girls I met in 1975, somewhere along the line, when I first moved to Oklahoma City. Okay. They're those little old ladies I was saying I didn't want to go pray with that day when I went to that day. No, they're all precious and they're dear. Cheryl, Anita, and Barbara.
Well, again, on behalf of the church, I want to thank you for sharing and for use it for us to encourage us to share our stories, because sometimes we can be encouraged when we hear somebody else's story, and then we can encourage someone else when we share our story. Corinthians, it says we're to comfort one another with the comfort that we ourselves have received. And so when the Lord works in our lives, it's good to share that with others and to help build them up in their own pilgrimage. Well, we do have a little time of fellowship afterwards. So stay. We've got some vittles in the back, so we're gonna enjoy eating a few things and fellowshipping with one another. And so I will just.